bicycles, that would be nice.
And the bicycles, but bicycles are a big part too.
All right, I guess we're ready for, to hear about environmental issues, and we have Catherine Nelson here from our office, who will begin describing, I guess, both Boyd's and Germantown.
That's right. Hello, welcome again to the MARC Master Plan Design Workshop. Just want to give you an overview of how we look at these areas through an environmental lens, when we're looking at unique features, important features for the natural environment. Go ahead. There we go. Okay, so we're starting out in the Boyd's area, of course, which is the whitish outline. Really, the feature that dominates Boyd's is the lake, Little Seneca Lake. This is a very important resource, as you all know. It's a created lake. It used to be Ten Mile Creek. Here's the dam in this location, and it's become more than it was planned to be. Fact supports a fishing population, I believe, as well as lots of recreation. But it's also our emergency water supply. In times of extreme drought, there will be a release at the dam, and that will go down down to the Potomac River, which eventually gets to our drinking water intake in Potomac. Also, there's a great deal of forest and canopy cover. So as much as 50% of the area is treed, which is a very nice feature. Go to the next slide. Another feature that really dominates the area from my point of view is actually hidden. So it's the diabase outcrop. So this is an area of surface rock. We have a few of these in Montgomery County, and they are so close to the surface that it makes the soil very, very thin. And also, this particular type of rock creates an unusual chemistry. So it supports unusual plants, those that are drought tolerant because the soil dries out so quickly. They're also, they also tolerate saturation, because the soil gets saturated very quickly when it rains because there's so little of it. And then there's plants that will tolerate the unusual chemistry of the soil. So those three things together create a habitat for rare, threatened, and endangered species. And so this is part of the reason that there's so much parkland in the Boyd's area, is because of this unique feature. And so you have, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, these are a couple of the top 10 natural areas in Montgomery County.
I'm not sure we use top 10, but I think we call them best natural areas. I don't think we sort of rank them anymore.
That's right. Thank you for updating me. Our best natural areas have gone beyond 10. So the diabase outcrop is one of them. The Ten Mile Creek and the Little Seneca Lake has created best natural areas along the lake area. So it's really quite unique and very important. Other things that we tend to look at is level of impervious surface. That's not quite as important here in Boyd's, but there is a big patch of imperviousness in these various industrial uses. Any questions about Boyd's specifically?
When you say impervious, that's man-made?
Yes. Areas that are rooftops, roads,
parking lots.
Parking lots, yeah.
And we've got drawings over there that kind of show that the, I guess, distribution graphically of you know, those types of things, the buildings, roads, even the tree, the forest edges.
So I don't know if you noticed, but the first slide was a summer shot, so it showed the green canopy. And then the next slide is winter. And so another thing that we look at, usually more in more urbanized areas, is the difference between forest and canopy. So a forest is what's going to show up in the winter. So it'll be these large patches of this dark area that you're only seeing the bark when you go back to summer. So here we'll see not just the forest areas, but little patches like perhaps along this this little bit of a stream that doesn't really qualify as a forest, but it shows up as what we call canopy. And so canopy coexists with lots of different environments, like you can have a canopy coexist with your house and your driveway, or with a parking lot. Whereas forest, we think of the forest as having a forest floor that's intact, it has shrub layers, small trees, big trees. And so that's what the difference is between forest and, for instance, that this image here is a view of canopy. So you'll see areas that shade some of the built environment.
Is there a dimension, typical dimension, that we use to determine what's a forest versus also? Or?
We want it to be at least 50 feet wide in order to qualify as a forest. That's very minimal. Most foresters will want it to be much wider, but in Montgomery County, we use 50 feet.
Because you get a whole ecology when you, animals and birds. And,
exactly, exactly. And the larger the forest, the more diverse and complex that ecology. In this shot, you can also see the streams. So this is this comes from the dam. So this is the rest of Little Seneca Creek. But also, could you go to the next one? The streams don't really show up very well. But because of the shallow soils, the surface bedrock, the streams tend to be kind of unusual. There are more of them. They're braided. The water has a harder time finding the low ground because it can't cut into that diabase bedrock. So the water tends to flow along that and pops up in unusual locations. Okay, moving on to Germantown. A much different environmental picture. So, just the remnants of a stream system that's left here in Germantown. It appears that a stream valley was used for the railroad in this location. So there's flowing water along the railroad track if you go there and look, but it doesn't look like a stream. It looks like just drainage. There also used to be a stream underneath the playing fields of the high school, and that has disappeared. This is very typical for older development in Montgomery County, where streams were looked at as if they were pretty much storm drainage. And so it was an acceptable thing to completely displace a stream or to put it underground and let it flow underground to allow other uses on top. There's a big stormwater management pond. This is also old technology in the past to control stormwater. We just dam a stream. And all of the flow from the upstream area would be collected here, and hopefully some of the sediment would drop out, and then the water would be released back into the stream system. We've gone through several upgrades since then, but we have someone talking about stormwater management specifically, so I'll leave the rest to him. Looking at the canopy, it's lesser here in the Germantown area, although for a highly developed area, it has some significant areas that really would be called forest, much more minimal. Next slide, going to the winter. I just wanted to point out that the same diabase, that big blob that's in Boyd's, a similar seam that exists in the county, just as a seam going up and down the whole county, cuts right through this part of Germantown. So this diabase seam in this location and in this location also create that surface rock. And this is not unusual, and I mean, it's not large enough to really affect the soils, to change their chemistry and to change very much the plant life, because it's just so small. But it's definitely there, so if you put a shovel in these locations, you, depending on, you know, how much soil has been able to develop, you might hear a ka-ching. Let's see, what else? Very high levels of impervious surface. So, what was the... I think we had that at...
Yeah, we do have that information. In the back, we have what we did is briefing books for November, our November meeting, and that has information, some of this information also in terms of...
So it's about 35% impervious level. And so that's going to be, you know, a huge building and big parking lots and parking lots and parking lots. And it's kind of amazing how much impervious... how much of our built environment is devoted to cars when we account for the roads, the parking lots, and driveways and such. And any questions about Germantown?
I got a bunch of questions. Just on that, is the parking garage better from imperviousness, if you will, if you can kind of concentrate all a certain amount of area in one spot instead of... Because we've heard visually from a historic perspective, they don't like that idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a parking lot and now you're going to put on a garage on that entire parking lot, you have the same impervious level. But there are places where there was plenty of room to have a sprawling parking lot, but for environmental reasons, they did squeeze it into several levels, and that reduced the impervious level of the whole area significantly. Yes?
The whole area is full of springs underneath the shale or in between the shale. So how they built one stormwater management plan, but how do you manage springs when you don't know when they're going to spring up?
So you're saying along this seam there are springs?
Yes.
Or just throughout your neighborhood?
Just generally.
Well, right, because the soil is so shallow, it doesn't take a whole lot of rain to completely saturate the soil, and that's when your springs are going to come up, because it can't infiltrate, and so it just stays under the surface until it too much rain has accumulated, and then you're going to see those springs appear.
It's a question. I'm glad you're here, because it's a question I've always wanted to get an answer to. The Clarksburg, I believe it's called, aquifer underground. Where does the water come from to fill that?
My understanding was that was a recharge area.
Recharge?
The recharge.
What does that mean?
An area where there's a lot of infiltration, and then the water goes underground and then pops up in other locations.
It's an underground. I've seen it mapped.
But you're saying it percolates down from the surface.
It just percolates down. That's how the water comes in.
For an underground lake, depends on how deep that is. Some of those did used to be surface water, and then they've been buried over time. So how connected that is with the surface water, sometimes some of the underground areas throughout the country, they just consider it fossil water. It really doesn't have much of a relationship at all with the surface water or what we call the groundwater, which is more shallow.
Exactly, so, my question, is it fossil water or is it?
Do either of you have that?
I do that though. No, I'm not sure. I know they can oftentimes be from long distances away to fill those aquifers. Hundreds of miles in some cases.
Yeah, from a stormwater standpoint, we're interested in that shallower recharge that gives the streams their base flow and keeps them alive. And that was the really big impetus when Clarksburg was developing was to make sure a lot of that runoff was put back into the ground specifically to keep those stream base flows alive. As far as the deeper water aquifers, we had no involvement with that.
But I can look into that and bring some more information.
Different topic, air quality.
Yeah.
You have thoughts on that? I worry that there's those trains, which I believe are diesel, there's so much diesel that they're putting out all day long and back and forth. And if it increases, what the ramifications of that would be?
Air quality is something that we don't really localize to a single master plan. Air quality tends to be something that we monitor and regulate as a region.
In the state?
It's federally mandated, but we do look at it in Montgomery County, but we tend to look at all of Montgomery County together with other jurisdictions within our metropolitan area to monitor days of ozone events. And the federal government has put a limit. As soon as we exceed, I can't remember how many days it is, we have to begin addressing, reducing the pollution.
I understand that's overall, but this corridor is a very concentrated area of people and transportation. No specific thoughts on
it. I regret to say there's nothing specific.
And this was even farther afield. Noise pollution, is that part of your environmental?
Yes, we do look at noise pollution. So there are two different levels of noise pollution, levels that are assessed for highly developed areas and then levels that are assessed for more residential areas. And there's a certain threshold beyond which noise is not supposed to go beyond that decibel level.
Does the county regulate that? Is that a...
Yes. Yes. So that if there is a noise-producing use and someone wants to put residential near that, if the underlying noise level is too great, they have to do some kind of mitigation, like a sound wall or special treatments to the building itself in order to mitigate. And if they're not able to mitigate down to a certain decibel level, then they're not able to.
So like the Beltway has all these sort of sound wall kind of, I mean, we're all used to the sound of the train, but in fact, it's actually fairly romantic but noxious at the same time, I suppose.
Right. So the sound level tends to be the more continuous types of sounds. The sound that you're talking about is more a nuisance sounds. So we do look at those two, but we don't have as specific regulations. Anything else? All right, moving on to water and sewer service. Our guru, if you will, from the county wasn't able to make it today. So since I work with him pretty closely on water and sewer issues, I agreed to look at his slides. So basically what he's just showing you is where the sewer service is. And that would be these patches here. And so basically not in Boyd's is the big picture on this slide. There is no public sewer service.
It's
Seneca Lodge. And then you're getting into to Germantown here. And this is an older development, I believe, that was given sewer service here, kind of right in the middle of the lake. And Germantown is just the opposite. everywhere in Germantown. There's sewer infrastructure. If you want to look closely, you can see the actual sewer lines and the water lines, but it's pretty much all